Golden State Media Concepts bring you Book Review Podcast, a haven for bookworms of all ages and the widest genres, from mystery to memoirs, romance to comedy, fantasy to sci-fi. If you love to read, this is the podcast for you. It's the Golden State Media Concepts Book Review Podcast.
And welcome to the GSMC Book Review Podcast, brought to you by the GSMC Podcast Network. I am your host, Sarah, and I am happy to have you here with me on this Tuesday for another author interview. First off, I hope you had a great weekend. Hope you got some reading in. I keep mentioning the snow. Hope the snow wasn't too crazy in your area, wherever your area is, or the rain. We're still having rain here, which is still making my roof leak. Always a good time, and thankfully it's not a huge leak, and it's being taken care of by a bucket, and it will be fixed soon. But, you know, it's still there. It's still leaking. So, anyway, it's not what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about books, and we are here to talk about one book in particular. That book is called The Unrepentant by E.A. Amar. He is my author interview today, and I'm excited to have you listen to that. Before we get to the interview, let me go ahead and give you the description of the book. 18-year-old Charlotte Reyes ran away from an abusive home only to end up tricked, kidnapped, and taken across the country by criminals. Charlotte manages to escape with the help of a reluctant former soldier named Mace Peterson, but she can't seem to shake the gang or the crooked cop paid to bring her back, alive or otherwise. With nowhere to run and nowhere to hide, Charlotte realizes she has only one option. She has to fight. Set in the Virginia-Maryland-DC triangle, The Unrepentant combines page-gripping action and black comedy and provides a no-holds-barred, necessary examination of the dark corners of the human mind. So you probably gathered from that description that this is a thriller, and you would be correct. It is a page-turner. I've said before that thrillers aren't always the genre that I go to first, but I have been exposed to more genres as I've done this podcast, and this book, like I said, it's a page-turner. It is fascinating, it is dark, it is hard to read at times, but there's also humor, there's also relationships, there are so many good things about this book that help to make up for the unpleasant things. And, you know, if you're a person that loves thrillers, then you should definitely check this out. If you're a person who's like, not so sure about thrillers, they're, like I said, sucked me in from the beginning, and it is a page turner. And while I might not have really said, yay, great subject matter, I mean, who does? It's got some really dark elements to it, but it also, like I said, has humor, it has relationship, it has all kinds of other things that really balance it out. So I do have copies of this book to give away, so if you are interested in it, you should definitely stay tuned to the end of the episode to find out how you can win a copy of The Unrepentant. Before we get to the end of the episode, we have to have an interview. So let's go ahead and turn to that interview with author E.A. Amar about his new book, which came out yesterday, in case you were wondering. That book is called The Unrepentant, and here is that interview.
Hi, Ed. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Sarah. Thank you so much for having me. I really, really appreciate this.
It's wonderful to have you here, and I'm excited to talk to you about your book, The Unrepentant. Before we get to the book, though, I'd love for my listeners to get to know you a little bit. If you could just share something about yourself, that would be great.
Sure. I'm about 5'10". Did you want more?
maybe just a little more.
Sure. Okay. So The Unrepentant is my third published novel. The first one came out in 2013. In addition to writing novels. I also am a monthly columnist for the Washington Independent Review of Books, and I've been with them for maybe, my gosh, 3 years or so, and I run the Washington, D.C. Noir at the Bar series. In addition to that, I'm the managing editor for the Thrill Begins, which is I do for the international thriller writers. The Thrill Begins is a website devoted to aspiring and debut crime fiction writers. And I also serve on the board of the International Thriller Writers.
Okay. Wow. Fun.
And I'm actually 5'9". I was lying earlier. I'm sorry.
Are you really only like 5'5"?
Only.
I mean, I'm just saying, is this number just going to keep going lower as the podcast continues?
I'm 3 feet tall.
Okay. Hey, own that. There's nothing wrong with it. So instead of your height, let's talk about your book. Tell us sure. about The Unrepentant.
So The Unrepentant is a romantic comedy set in the world of sex trafficking. No, that's not it. It is
that's true.
No, The Unrepentant is a story about a young woman named Charlotte Reyes who escapes from a group of criminals and realizes that to fully escape, she needs to take her revenge on them. And she's joined in this by a retired, somewhat disillusioned soldier named Mace Peterson.
Mm-hmm. And go ahead.
Oh yeah, go ahead, sir.
Oh, I was just going to say, what was the inspiration for this particular story?
So, all of my books have essentially been a study of the philosophy of violence. I think, you know, I'm very much a dude, and I grew up on Indiana Jones and rap and then Tarantino movies and crime fiction, and violence was, you know, plays a role in a lot of those, but it's cartoonish and generally bloodless. And as I grew older, you know, I began to see violence more in a light that's callous and cruel and disturbing. And that sort of, I guess, dichotomy interested me. And I really began to write more about violence and what it does to people and why people do it. And I think when you look into violence enough, especially from the perspective I did, where you're looking at it as an act that's cruel and that has elements of bullying to it, and of superiority and dominance, you eventually get to looking at violence committed against women by men. And I think that ended up being something to me that was revealing in the way it is to a lot of men, sort of as the Me Too movement showed. You know, a lot of men were like, I had no idea things were that bad. And women were like, you don't know the half of it. So I think there's something about that, the element of violence and how it affects men and women was really the genesis of The Unrepentant.
Okay. And you've touched on this a little bit, but the book is about sex trafficking, which is neither an easy nor a pleasant topic.
Sure.
So you talked about the Me Too movement and violence against women. What made you then take that to kind of the next level to decide to write about sex trafficking in the book?
Well, it was sort of, you know, the thing is the book, I don't know, it is about sex trafficking, but I don't consider it necessarily a book about sex trafficking in the same way. You know, I think when my agent and I were looking at comps, one of the things we kept going back to was Kill Bill. And in Kill Bill, a lot of things happen to Uma Thurman's character, but those things don't necessarily define the movie. What defines it is kind of like this woman sort of taking her revenge. And I feel that does better serves the book's description, but also sort of does justice to books that are really devoted to a study of sex trafficking, and in ways mine isn't. That was kind of the impetus for that. And I'm sorry, what was the question?
No, I mean, I think you answered it in a roundabout sort of way. I mean, there is the whole impetus for Charlotte's actions is the fact that, you know, the basis of the story is sex trafficking. Mm-hmm. Then as the story goes on, that's really not what it's about. You know, it's what happens after, and it's her relationship with Mace and everything. I was just curious as to, you know, when you're thinking about writing a thriller, as you do, how do you, some people would shy away from the harder topics of things like violence and sex trafficking. So maybe a better question would be what draws you to some of those darker elements?
You know, it was, that's right. And I remembered what I was going to say that got lost somewhere in that answer. But, you know, looking at it, it was a bit of a tough thing because I wanted to write a female protagonist. The protagonist of my last two books had been a man, and the characters that readers tended to talk to me more about after they read those books were the female characters. And I wanted to look into that more and really have a woman as the protagonist of a book. But along those lines, I was looking at how women are commonly portrayed in crime fiction and in thrillers, and you know, often they're the sidekick. And a lot of times I'd read characters who sort of embodied, or not sort of, embodied that, what they call the myth of the happy hooker. Mm. You know, the Julia Roberts and Pretty Woman thing. And I wanted to explore that, you know, so I read about that. That was, and I think that's sort of where my research into violence and reading about it led me. It led me to, when you read about it and you read about it, how it's affecting women, sex trafficking and human trafficking is a big part of that. So I was sort of disabused of a lot of my notions about prostitution in that sense. And that research kind of made its way into the book.
Yeah. And so talk a little bit more about the main characters in Charlotte and Mace. What about them do you think will resonate with readers?
So, you know, Charlotte's tougher to figure out. You know, her experience makes her unique, and so does her background. You know, I don't think she's a character that people can necessarily relate to in a lot of elements, but I wanted to try and bring her out, bring her humanity out, because it's something that comes into question in the book, I think. And you have to wonder if that humanity's been sort of taken from her. But I wanted I hope that there are some quiet moments in the book with her, or maybe in her relationship or conversations with Mace or Mace's estranged wife, ex-wife, Eve, where that humanity comes forth. And so you can see that it hasn't been completely, that nothing could take it away entirely. Mm-hmm. But in that sense, and because of her role, I mean, she's a co-protagonist with Mace, right? But she's the leader. She's the hero of the book. And Mace is really more of the sidekick character and at times the comic relief, despite his own traumas. So with Charlotte, she's a little harder to figure out. I do hope, like I said, those quiet moments resonate with readers. With Mace, I feel that he's the one that I don't think readers would be necessarily more attracted to. I guess it depends on the reader, but he's the one who you find who would be more reassuring, I think. You know, he's mm-hmm. the person who responds to situations with humor, and ideally sort of tamps down that darkness. In earlier versions of the book, Mace was his trauma was much more severe than it eventually was written. And I realized the book was, you know, wasn't fun to read. I mean, one of my early readers, a great writer named Alan Orloff, he read it, and his first note back to me was, "Well, damn, that's depressing." Which isn't an experience. It's not fair, right? You want to be honest with this stuff, right? And I feel like I'm not doing my job if I'm not honest. But at the same token, that's not necessarily why we read. You know, we read for escape and for hope and for knowledge, but we don't want every single thing there. So, you know, hopefully that if there's something that people resonate with in the characters, then those are the moments that they get that sense of escape and that sense of hope.
So we do have to take our first break of the podcast. Hopefully you've gotten a good taste of what this book is about and what the main characters, what, you know, some of their motivations. I will say that I feel like Mace's character has a lot of similar sense of humor to the author's. So that gives you a little insight into his character. When we come back, we will be talking more about the characters and the story, some of the research that was done, and then talking about some other topics. So stay tuned. You're listening to the GSMC Book Review Podcast, and I will be right back.
Do you want to be healthier, yet you just don't know what to do? All these shows telling you this and that, but nothing seems to work. Well, listen close. Golden State Media Concepts has got something great for you. The health and wellness podcast dedicated to workout trends, healthy eating habits, diet, and everything about healthy living. Join us in our banters as we help you not just live life to the fullest, but live it to the healthiest.
Welcome back to the GSMC Book Review Podcast. I am speaking today with author E.A. Amar about his new thriller out yesterday called The Unrepentant. So let's go ahead and get right back to that interview.
And, you know, I mean, Mace is the kind of comic relief, more human aspect of the relationship, but he's got his darker side as well. I mean, it's not specifically said that he has PTSD, but I would assume he has some from mm-hmm. his time in Iraq. But he also suffers from depression, which is genetic. And so I really appreciated that aspect of his character because it makes him more fully human. He does have that kind of self-deprecating sense of humor, but there's also this other aspect to him where he is not just the sidekick, but he is kind of fully realized in that way.
Thank you. Yeah, the depression was, you know, something that it sort of made sense. I wanted him. It's something in a way that Charlotte can help him out with. You know, there's a point I think where, you know, he realizes he hasn't been depressed, and there's a connection there that helps him. And I didn't want that to be, you know, something that was necessarily treated lightly, you know, like, hey, now you're fine, just make friends, you
know? Right. Yeah. Just think happy thoughts. Yeah,
exactly. But I did want there to, but he's also in a situation where he doesn't you know, where he's not he's thrust out of sort of the place he's ensconced himself.
Right. And you know, I don't want to give anything away, but you don't tie it up in a nice, neat bow at the end. In terms of his depression, it's not like, yay, now he's fine.
Right.
So in terms of the story or the characters or setting or anything, is there anything autobiographical in the book?
Yeah, you know, with both characters in a way, you know, I'm mixed race. I was born in Panama. My mom's Panamanian, and my dad is from Nevada, so Nevadanian. That's not what they say.
I was wondering where you were going with that.
but you know, I'm mixed race, and I never really realized it with my first two books. The protagonist was also mixed race, and it never occurred to me. I never thought about that. I mean, a little bit, but it wasn't like a real conscious effort or something that I was trying to portray. It just those books were written very naturally. You know, Charlotte is Hispanic, and Mace is mixed race. He's half black, half white. And a lot of that, I think, it comes from me. It's not the kind of books I didn't see those characters when I was growing up reading. And I'd never really, I'd also always thought, if you're writing about characters of a certain racial background, they're going to fall into one or two categories, sort of like when you fill out forms, you know, white, black, Hispanic, Pacific Islander. I hadn't really thought much that there was anything to say about growing up with a mixed race, you know, and then over, I guess it was maybe a decade ago, I started to realize that, you know what, this is sort of a unique experience, and I was often alone growing up in that way. And I have a son. My wife's Vietnamese. I'm half Hispanic, half white. He's gonna grow up mixed, but the world's changed a lot since then, and he won't feel that isolation. I don't think that I did. But in that sense, yeah, I want to create characters now that represent that. So I think, yeah, both Mace and Charlotte in their background, how they view the world, they probably take that from me.
Yeah. And kind of moving off with that, Charlotte, Mace, and Eve are all, you know, Eve is also African-American. Mm-hmm. And so often in books, the main characters, as you said, growing up, you didn't see, you know, people of color in those, mm-hmm. those roles. So it was really refreshing to see, you know, the hero of the piece and the main characters of the piece being people of color, as opposed to just sort of side characters or the bad guys. Mm-hmm. So, is that something that you consciously do when you write in terms of diversity, or is it just something that kind of flows naturally out of your experience?
It used to just be, it wasn't as much of a conscious effort as it is now. And it, you know, a lot of times it's interesting. You know, I haven't honestly realized this until this exact moment. But when I write short stories, the characters are usually white. And when I write novels, the characters are almost always mixed. And I'm thinking about that now. I think it's because with short stories, I generally am exploring something other than, I'm not diving as deep into the character. But if it's going to be a novel, I don't think I could write a character who was white, who wasn't mixed, who didn't have those experiences on it, because I want that to be represented. With a short story, I guess it's different. I'm really looking at something. You can write about that, and some of my favorite stories do, but I'm usually writing about something else other than their race. And I usually keep the character, that's not much as much of a factor as it is in the novels.
Interesting. You've talked a little bit about this, but what kind of research did you do for the book?
So, you know, I did more research than I ever had. You know, I usually, most of the research I do is visiting places, and I did that. You know, you write about places in the area like Baltimore or around Maryland or DC or Virginia, and I visit those places. You know, I feel like it makes, I some writers do great work off Google Maps, and I can't. I have to go there. I have to walk there. I have to feel what the weather's like. So I did that for this book, as I've always done, but I also talked with a lot of people, and I read a lot of books. I read a lot of books about sex trafficking, and it was a bit exhausting. Yeah, I'd have to take breaks. Yeah, I'd read one nonfiction book and then a fiction. It's still crime fiction, so it's not like that great an escape, but you know, it's better.
It's at least fiction.
Yeah, and you know, the nonfiction books I read were much more violent and much more descriptive than my book. So it was they were tough and they were honest and they were necessary, but rough. And I also talked with people. I talked with people who work in anti-sex trafficking efforts, a lot who, well, not a lot, but some who had been, prostitutes and were trying to steer young men or women from a similar fate. And I talked to a couple of active sex workers who had asked because I told people, you know, I'd like to mention you in the acknowledgements for all the help and information you've given me, if that's okay. And they asked not to, not because of, I don't think they mentioned not because they're afraid of being outed or anything like that, but more because they didn't want to be, there's a very polarizing debate in anti-sex trafficking versus sex work. And mm-hmm. they didn't want to fall on, they didn't want to fall on one side of that. And I didn't want to either. I read, articles and books by sex workers, who are active in the field and still are as of the time that they wrote those books. And, I can understand to an extent their perspective, you know, so it's, you know, it was an issue that I wanted to write about, but it's a very polarizing, charged one.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I can't imagine. I was just thinking when you were talking about the research, just immersing yourself in that. And it's a lot. Just you get a very detailed picture just reading the book. I can't imagine immersing myself that deeply. The kind of the level of, you had to have felt.
Yeah.
There's a word there, but the just kind of sums it up for me.
I think blah is perfect. Blah should be like, what's the German word for that? Oh, blah.
Yeah. So you have two other books out. It sounds like you write a lot. I mean, you're involved in all kinds of writing aspects of your life. Are there other writings that you would like to highlight?
Yeah, there's one. You know, it's odd. It's the thing I'm really most proud of. I mean, this book, The Unrepentant, has been really warmly received, and I didn't honestly think it would be. I was terrified. You know, when the Publisher's Weekly Review was coming out, and Book Riot was going to cover it, and other places are covering it still, but I've never been in those magazines or publications. And I really didn't know how people were going to react. And it was, like I said, warmly received. And yeah, I thought maybe you were going to yell at me for like 30 minutes or an hour today. I don't know how people are going to feel about it. So that's been great. But so I'm proud of the book, but what I'm really, another thing I've written that I'm really proud of, was, and it's tough to say because it feels a bit like I'm taking something very private that happened and glamorizing it for something, but there's no money to be made here or anything. So this is just something I did. My son was, his daycare. He was sleeping in his daycare, a couple of years ago, and a bullet went through the window and, hit the wall, and the kids were asleep, so they were on the ground. The teachers were sitting down, so nobody was hit. But that, you know, affected me a great deal. And I was asked to, a terrific writer and editor, Eric Beatner, put together an anthology called Unloaded. It is crime fiction writers writing with stories that have no guns. So the point, it was kind of a way of saying that, you know, kind of taking the abundance of guns out of some part of society. It was kind of a demonstration of that. And he did that book did really well. And it was Joyce Carol Oates contributed to it. And he asked if I would write an essay about the experience at my son's daycare for the sequel, the follow-up book. And I did. And I've just never written anything that personal in a way. And it really, made me think about, every parent has complicated issues and an understand a complicated relationship with parenting. So that made me sort of lay that out, and it made me sort of realize what my son means to me. But then I also, from that essay, my wife and I have lived in this area since 93. So this area has been hit by violence, from 9/11, when my father was in the Pentagon, he lived, to the Beltway sniper, when nobody would leave their houses in this area for about 2 weeks. To my wife works for a company where a gunman came in a few years ago and took 3 people hostage in the lobby. And then there was a shooting at my son's daycare, and it's, so I'm probably being told that I should move. It's probably like a really clear symbol, like, we don't want you here. But it's also, I think maybe that's why I'm studying violence the way I am and looking at it the way I am. But that essay that came out last year is, I really love that essay.
Yeah, you said it was in a sequel. What's the name of that?
Oh, it's Unloaded Volume 2. I think it's more crime writers writing without guns.
Okay. Eric Biedner. Into that.
Edited by Eric Biedner. And mine's the only – they're all short stories. Mine's the only essay. And obviously mine has guns in it. But everything it's great. There's Laura McHugh, James Ziskin. There's some great writers in there.
Okay. Wow. Thank you for that.
Sure.
I would have to process that before I could say anything helpful. I'm going to ask you what's next, even though this book just came out yesterday, March 4th. but are you working on another book?
Yeah. So I was involved with, I co-edited and contributed to a novel and stories called The Night of the Flood, where a flood hit this town, a fictional town, a dam was intentionally blown up by a group of vigilantes, and it causes a flood in this town. And then 14 writers each wrote about 1 hour that night in the town, during the flooding and the rioting and the looting and the chaos that would ensue. So that book came out last year, and I co-edited it with a writer named Sarah M. Chen, who's fantastic, and I love Sarah. And we are planning a follow-up to it, and it is we have a lot of the same writers plus some new ones are doing it's not a sequel, but a separate book with the same kind of concept, one theme, and everyone's tackling it. And everybody sent their stories, and Sarah and I have to go through it and edit the damn thing. And neither of us are looking forward to it, and we're putting it off. But at this point, I think we have to. So that's next.
Wow. The logistics of that must be huge, because you said there were 14 in the first book?
Yeah.
How do you get 14 people to write about the same town and have consistency? And, are there guidelines, like, this is kind of how the town is laid out, or are there crossover characters ever? How does that work?
Yeah, we did. I mean, for the first one, we had sort of like, okay, here's the storyline, and we had people put in their stories, and then the writers would pull from those stories and like take little minor things and work them into their stories. It worked really well. And actually, for the map of the town, we wanted everyone to have like the same map, so we had to come up with one. We used Springfield from The Simpsons. I was like, this is perfectly laid out to what our town would be like. So for this one, We've done the same thing. We established some parameters, some certain characters that could recur in stories, a timetable. But the one thing where Sarah is so good and where we work really well together is that I can give Sarah the brunt of the work and she does it, and then I take a lot of the credit.
Oh, geez.
So we work really well in that way. We are a natural team.
I'm sorry, Sarah. You should smack him.
Yeah. Yeah, she puts up with a lot. I mean, we're going to have a 3-hour conversation about the book, you know, going through the edits and stuff. And you've been on the phone with me for, you know, like 30 minutes. I mean, imagine 3 hours. It's terrible.
Moving on.
I think moving on right into the break, this seems like a perfect time to take our second break of the podcast. When we come back, we will have the conclusion of this interview. So stay tuned. You're listening to the GSMC Book Review Podcast, and I will be right back.
Tired of searching the vast jungle of podcasts? Now listen close and hear this out. There's a podcast network that covers just about everything that you've been searching.
Hey!
The Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network is here. Nothing less than a podcast bliss with endless hours of podcast coverage. From news, sports, music, fashion, cooking, entertainment, fantasy, football, and so much more. So stop lurking around and go straight out to the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. Guaranteed to fill that podcast itch. Whatever it may be. Visit us at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And download us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Google Play.
Welcome back to the GSMC Book Review Podcast and the interview with author E.A. Amar about his new thriller, The Unrepentant. Let's go ahead and get back to that interview and its conclusion.
You write a lot and in a lot of kind of different styles. Did you always want to be a writer? Kind of when? How did you get into it?
So, yeah, I wanted pretty early on. I mean, I think it was, you know, every writer, I think, probably has an experience where some teacher tells them, you know, hey, you should go into writing. And for me, that was in college, my sophomore year, my psychology. I went into college to study psychology, and sort of I was a big fan of the Bob Newhart show. And so that was my model. Went into but my psychology professor said, you really should go into writing. And I was like, really? And he said, I really think you should. I think it's the field for you. And also, you're failing my class. And then I failed out of school, as a matter of fact. So the school said, if you want to come back in, I begged him. I said, you've got to let me back in. My parents are going to kill me. And I was going to George Mason. So it's not like I fell out of Harvard or like a good story. It was, you know, I mean, I love Mason, but, you know, come on, it's not failing out of Yale. So they said, they were like, you can come back in, but you have to change majors. You cannot study psychology. This is not the field for you. But that seemed fair. So I went into English. And I'd always loved reading and writing, and I never really took it seriously as something to study. And then it was great. I loved it seemed easy for me, which is why I didn't consider it as a viable field. But then I got into it and I realized, oh, this isn't easy at all. And this is wonderful. And then I didn't fail out again. So, you know, it was clearly the right decision.
Yeah. I mean, that was not a subtle sign in your life.
Exactly.
So then out of your own experience, do you have advice for aspiring authors?
There's two things. The first is, it's really hard not to do this. And I totally get it, but don't rush. You know, I was in a position where when I started trying to write, there was no self-publishing. I mean, there was, but it was just vanity publishing is what they called it. The self-publishing as the internet really wasn't around. So I had to go sort of the long, arduous route to get traditionally published. And when self-publishing became an option and I could have gone that route, I was so rooted in this goal that it wasn't really something I considered, which isn't to cast aspersions on self-publishing. I have a lot of friends who do it and do it really well and write terrific books, but I would have taken it as an easier way to get published, which is not how you should consider it. So I would say it's an art form. It takes a long time. You know, William T. Volman once said a writer should wait 10 years to get published, which is what I did, but not because I wanted to. But he's probably something about that, I think, is probably true. The other thing I would say is always work on a location. You know, I read a lot of, like, when people send me stuff to read or if I'm doing critiques or something, a lot of writing has no place. And that's a dramatic mistake. You really need to write a place, and you need to have a relationship with it. A place isn't really a character in a book, like people sometimes say, but it is, but it affects all the characters. And it should represent them. It should be inside them. You know, you should know. I know when someone's from Philly, because I'm like, oh, God, that asshole's from Philly. You know, you should be able to tell. I have a lot of friends in Philly, which is why I say that. But you should be able to, you know, you should know, like, how this factors in. I think Flannery O'Connor said, you know, regionalism is American literature or something like that. And she was right. You know, that's a thing of being a writer. And you should always make sure that you have a relationship with the place your characters walk and breathe and live.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you. And then, when you aren't writing and you have time for reading, do you have favorite authors or genres?
Yeah, I mean, I was always a big fan of John Updike, who I think has fallen a bit about, who rightfully in some ways has fallen out of favor a bit. I don't read him as much anymore because he's dead, and he hasn't published because of that. But I love Anne Tyler. You know, I should read. I haven't read everything by her, but I'd love to, and I should. Anne Tyler is just tremendous, and within writers, you know, who are in or close to crime fiction, you know, there's a guy in Baltimore, Nick Corpon. He's terrific. He has a new book called Old Ghosts. That's great. Novella that just came out. Oh, a woman in Baltimore named Sujata Massey. Just terrific. She writes, she's with Soho Press now and writes a historical mystery series that's set in England about the first, I think, Indian woman to study medicine in England. So it's great. And then this area, I mean, I live in an area that's just chock full of great writers. A writer named Angie Kim has a book coming out that hopefully will be gigantic, called Miracle Creek. It's her debut novel, but it reads like, you know, an experienced writer's fifth or sixth book. And then another writer, real quick, who writes sort of outside crime fiction, but she's written both in and out of the field, Tara Laskowski. She has a book coming out called One Lost Night, I think. It's coming out in the fall, and her husband Art Taylor has won more short story awards and writing awards than anybody I know. And all those people are in this area, so we sort of have an embarrassment of riches in the DC writing region.
Yeah, sounds like it. What are you reading with your son right now?
Oh, we're reading The Unrepentant. No, we're not. He's five.
Yeah.
Actually, you know what we're reading? He loves this book, and I hadn't read it, and I love reading it every night to him. Fox and Socks. I had no idea how much of a tongue twister it is. And we have a game where I try and read it as fast and clearly as I can. And if I mess up, I have to say, butt breath, because that makes him laugh.
Yeah.
So I'm like reading, you're like, box and knocks on, socks and box on, talks. Oh, shoot, butt breath. And then he just loves it. So I'm really raising him the right way. There's no way he'll end up on a couch later in life.
He'll end up on a couch reading to his own children.
Yeah, that's the way to go. We're also really into, right now he loves Frog and Toad.
Nice.
But if you have any recommendations, I'd be happy to take them for 5-year-old reading. Because I don't have a lot of ideas.
Anything with underwear.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. The Bear in Underwear series always makes me laugh.
Really? Bear in Underwear? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he wears these little tidy whities. It's funny.
I'm already laughing. So yeah, this is about exactly. My level of humor.
Yeah. Anyway, I know you have a website, so tell people the address of your website and where they can find you on social media.
Yeah, the website is eaymar.com, eaymar.com, and it's sort of a repository for everything I've written, and it also has all of my upcoming events. And then you can find me at my Twitter handle, which is eaamar, or you can find me at eamar, I think it's eaamar at Facebook, or eamar writes, one of the two.
Okay.
Or just send me a friend request. I blindly accept all friend requests, so I'm very lonely.
Are those links available on your website?
They are.
Okay.
You can find them all there.
Okay, sounds good. And then we have talked about a lot of different things, but is there anything that we haven't covered that you would like people to know about writing or your books, anything in general?
I guess the one thing I'm a big proponent of, and I'm not as active about this as other people are, but diversity in fiction and crime fiction, obviously, in particular, is important to me. And there's writers like we mentioned before, Kelly Garrett, who's a friend of mine, who's really taken the lead on that and is probably the best voice talking about diversity in crime fiction today. But there's two publishers coming out that I'd like to mention who are focusing on that. One is coming out from Polis Books. It's going to be an imprint called Agora, and it's run by a woman named Chantel Amy Osman, who is fantastic. She actually was the editor for The Unrepentant because she does work with Down and Out Books, but she is starting her own imprint, and she's got some fantastic writers lined up for publication in the fall. And I really appreciate what Chantel and Jason, who runs Polis, are doing. And there's another publisher doing the same thing. They started around the same time, Bronzeville Books, which will be run by Danny Gardner. And I believe Renee Asher Pickup is also working on it with them. So those two publishers coming out, I would hope people would pay attention to, because I think they'll really contribute to writing in a meaningful way.
Okay. Thank you so much for that. And I also want to thank you for taking the time out of your weekend to talk to me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it was so much fun. I really enjoyed this. And it's really an honor to be included in your lineup of guests. So thank you so much for having me, Sarah.
Thank you once again to Ed for joining me on the podcast to talk about his new book. Thank you, as always, to you, my listeners. I so appreciate you. And if you are interested in possibly winning a copy of The Unrepentant, you can do so by simply going to our social media pages, Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, and commenting on this episode, episode 142, that is Interview with E.A. Amar, and that's it. Just comment on one of those pages, Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, and you will be entered to win a copy of The Unrepentant. Please do like and share those posts as well. But in order to be entered into the contest, you do have to comment, not just like and share. Do all three. Like, share, comment. I would love it. Thank you, as always, to you, my listeners. I hope you are having a great week so far. I hope that you will join me again on Thursday. It is a week of thrillers, because on Thursday I will be speaking to author Tosca Lee about her new thriller, The Line Between. Both these books, The Unrepentant and The Line Between, are thrillers. They're in the thriller genre, both very, very different. So you're going to have to tune in on Thursday to find out why. What's so different about the next one? How are they different? Maybe how are they similar? So yeah, join me on Thursday for that interview. In the meantime, have a great week and go out there and get yourself lost in a good book. Thanks.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts Book Review Podcast, part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. From movies to music, from sports to entertainment, and even weird news. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you, and we hope you have enjoyed today's program.